Welcome to Who Knew. We are fans of the current series of Doctor Who, and here we discuss our likes, dislikes, and insights into the modern regeneration of the show. Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher, or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast. All our episodes are on WhoKnewPodcast.com. You can leave comments there, or email us at WhoKnewPodcast@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram and Twitter account. Tweet at us at WhoKnewPodcast, and find us on Facebook. Today's episode is episode 4 of season 4, The Suntaran Stratagem. Martha Jones calls the Doctor back to Earth to help with an old enemy, the Suntarans. This episode is written by Helen Rayner, directed by Douglas McKinnon. It originally aired on the 26th of April, 2008, and it was watched by 7.06 million viewers. Hi, this is Eugene. Let's introduce ourselves.
Hi, this is Frank.
Hey, it's Kelsey.
This is Arlene.
Hello, this is Auburn.
Hi, this is Brian.
Joe Nakashima, a freelance reporter, is tossed out of Radigan Academy by its founder, a young genius named Luke Radigan, inventor of Atmos. Joe is arguing that Atmos is dangerous, but Luke says she has no proof. She gets into her car and tries to turn off the Atmos navigation directions, but it cannot be disabled. She tells it to give directions to unit headquarters. Radigan talks to an unknown entity through the Atmos interface and recommends she be terminated. Atmos takes control of the car and drives it into the river, killing her. The Doctor and Donna receive a call from former companion Martha Jones, telling them to get back to Earth.
So since Josh isn't here, so when did Waze start? Is this going to be Waze type of thing?
I thought you were going to say, what year did this air?
I was about to ask, what year did this air
2008.
Again? 2008.
Long before Waze.
I like the smash cut right from the journalist going into the water to the Doctor and Donna. Like sometimes, you know, we get a little bit of like resolve to a scene, but this was just like, okay, that happened. And now we're right in. Donna is doing things to the TARDIS console and the Doctor is kind of surprised.
She's driving the TARDIS. Yeah. It's like, wow, she's really stepped up. This is the fourth episode with her. So I don't see Rose or Martha taking over, but Donna, let me try.
And I can see the Doctor letting her try just to shut her up.
And is this where she says, what am I going to put a dent in it?
Yeah. In the 80s.
Oh, somebody put a dent in the 80s.
And then he goes, somebody put a dent. And well, someone did. I like that line.
The 80s were fun. We had fun.
Do you remember them? Maybe that's why you had fun.
Yes, I do.
That's a joke.
I don't take drugs.
Anymore.
I was high on life.
Are we high now?
Time change.
I like when the phone started ringing and just Donna, that's a phone. That's a mobile phone. What is that doing in a phone box? And it's Martha's phone that she had given to the Doctor, just to, you know, a little flashback to that, which is what I thought was nice. Mm-hmm. He has to know who's calling because only one person knows that number. Mm-hmm. That would be Martha.
It's interesting. He doesn't seem happy.
Because he knows this is a problem. Martha wouldn't call unless something's wrong. So I think at that point when he's not happy, it's the guilt because of that year that happened.
And yeah.
Her family remembers
it. Yeah, I really do feel he feels the guilt.
Yeah, because her family was so distraught over it.
And I also don't think he knows how Martha is going to feel towards him. It's almost like he expects she could be really mad at me and I don't want to hear that.
So there was a moment at the end of Martha's last episode where she handed the Doctor the phone. Mm-hmm. So I was like, did she slip it in without him knowing?
No, I think it's more of, uh-oh, what does this mean? Okay. I think Frank's right that way.
It's been a while. That phone would have been dead by then.
No, he supercharged it.
It's a wireless charger.
It's reaching across billions of light years. It's fine.
It's fine. Atmos runs it. Yeah. Get it.
Those must be some roaming charges.
I want to know her last name. They pronounce it Nakashima rather than Nakashima, as we would hear in America.
Because we're American.
It's a Japanese British thing. But it was strange.
And well, it would be in Japan, it would be Nakashima or it would be...
But even the actress pronounces it.
Yeah.
Nakashima.
Because I think that's how you would pronounce that name in Britain.
Threw me off. And it's such a small role, but such a pivotal part in the storyline, because she's trying to contact Colonel Mace to tell him there's something going on. Check the dates. Check, you know, the times of people who died with Atmos. So she gets that information out and then drowns.
But she did go up against a guy named Radigan. I mean, Rat is in his name.
I immediately thought of the Great Mouse Detective.
So did I. Same Radigan. Thing.
Yeah.
Song going through my head.
Yep. Me too.
I'm like, I know he's a bad guy.
Well, also, he's a weaselly little American. Of course he's going to be a bad guy.
Is his first name Adam?
Oh, is he American? Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, his accent.
Or maybe his lack of accent. That's why he didn't catch it. Mm. Or to us, exactly. Is what I'm saying.
We have accents.
Yes, we do.
Martha is working for Unit and brings the Doctor and Donna to the Atmos factory, where Unit is taking control. Martha and Donna hit it off right away, but later, Donna asks the Doctor if traveling with him has changed Martha from a doctor to a soldier. They learn that besides giving directions, Atmos lowers a car's carbon emissions to zero and can be fitted to any make of automobile, and it's going global. After hearing a voice message from reporter Joe Nakashima, they discover that yesterday, 52 people died around the world at the exact same moment. The only connections they could find is that they were all poisoned and died in their cars, cars that had Atmos installed.
Dun, dun, dun. I like the turning of expectation when a former companion meets the current companion. Like we had that with Sarah Jane and Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we have it with Martha and Donna, and they hit it off instead of kind of bicker, I guess.
And the Doctor's going, oh, no, don't fight, don't fight. I just love Donna. Oh, shut up. It's like, oh, nice to meet you. Oh, my gosh, you're engaged.
I liked it better when they fight.
Well, the Doctor, what do you mean she's engaged? It's like, look, you idiot.
Yeah. But there's still the first thing Martha says, oh, that didn't take long. It's like, oh, writers, stop writing that. I mean, I can understand it.
I was fine with it because I think Martha was more teasing the Doctor at this point.
That's true. She'd moved on. Right. She's engaged to
Tom
Milligan.
Good for her.
And hopefully those people remember who Tom Milligan is.
He's Lucifer. From the show, Lucifer. From the show.
Is he?
I'm talking Doctor Who here. Who here? When she came back after the year, she was on the beach and she met up with Tom to take her to the professor.
Doherty.
Oh, okay.
So the tall, good-looking guy is Tom.
Well, remember the year didn't happen.
It reset.
He did die. He got shot out on the street, but...
Okay.
Then time rewound, and Martha must have gone and looked him up.
Well, at the end of that episode, Martha called, you know, she delivered flowers to Doherty, and then she called up Tom to see he's okay, so she knew it. And she just went, okay, well, since I'm staying here, let's maybe run into him.
I also liked the reunion of Martha and the Doctor, and I think some of the hesitancy when the Doctor first saw Martha goes to, Brian, what you were saying earlier about him having some guilt left over from that.
He doesn't know how she's going to react, and when she seems to be okay, he's so happy.
Yeah, no, that was really sweet. And I like the production here. We kind of have a cool shot of the Doctor looking at Martha, but you can see like deep into the TARDIS.
Yes, that was well done.
Yeah, that was really neat, and I think... You know, it felt like this was definitely shot at a few different places.
Yes.
And I think it really worked in this sequence, but there was a later sequence where Donna first meets or has her reunion with Wilfred. And there, like, the camera angles and just got a little weirder. And I'll talk about it more then, but it felt like a kind of a similar kind of cheat where, you know, maybe the actors were in two different kind of locations. You know, right. Like Martha was separate from the Doctor for a little bit, and then they had their scene together. And later, Donna is separate from Wilfred, and then they have their scene together. But this one I thought worked a lot better than later one.
And that scene it's in an alleyway. So that's where Martha joined the Doctor in the alley, back alley of like that restaurant bar thing where they were having the family party. And then I like that it's sort of brought back around where she's seeing the Doctor again in another alley.
And I like that there are consequences. Mm. How's your family? And she's like, doing better. They're coping. That year was hell. And we remember it.
And Martha's doing better than okay. I mean, she's engaged. She's a full-fledged doctor now, which is great.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, pretty high up with Unit. Mm-hmm. Being able to start this whole blue sky, which is the Doctor's here. Let's get this going. So I think she's really thriving.
But I like it when Donna says, did you turn her into a soldier? Right. Because this is a Martha that's taking charge in a very, I don't want to say militaristic, but in a very command-oriented, get-the-job-done way.
But I think that is a nice repercussion of the year of having to fight.
Yes.
And doing all that. So she has become
But you can see the Doctor does not like it.
Right, but she's not just a doctor, but she is military.
Yeah.
And she is a soldier.
Yeah.
But she still is a doctor. I mean, she's able to balance both of these.
Right, but I don't think the Doctor sees that yet. Because when Donna says to him, you know, is this what you did? You notice the Doctor can't even answer her.
And to me, it comes off a bit more arrogant, where the Doctor is, this isn't how I wanted you. Change back.
Well, that's the thing that bothers me the most about the Doctor and Martha, is that their relationship together is that the Doctor feels that he is so in control and I'm the one that made Martha like this and it's all about him and, oh, she's going to be mad because I have a new companion and, oh, she's devastated because she had a crush on me and she's not going to move on. So it's like he's very the center of her universe and he can't see that she's her own human being. And that's what I don't like about the writing of the relationship between Martha and the doctor.
Do you think it's the writing, though? Because I think that's very much how this doctor would react to Martha.
I like the writing.
I think that writing is pretty dead on.
But it just reminds me again, like, of the beginning with the doctor and Martha, where he would lead her on, the jerk guy.
Yes. But he's a cad.
But for me, the way this is written and comes off is that she's not falling for it. She's like, no, not I'm my own person. And
not
it's like,
anymore.
You got to catch up.
Not anymore, but she did.
Right. That's what I think is great about this writing is that it shows that Martha has grown and she has come into her own and she's not going to be just, you know, doing what the doctor wants her to do. She's standing up to him and calls him out on things.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, well, this is who I am and I'm doing it well. And he comes around to it finally and going, yeah, that's the old Martha. You're still, you know, hanging on and doing things. So.
He's so just you such a jerk to her, though.
Yeah. That is true. I mean, we agree on
such
that.
Such a jerk to her.
I, you know, now I'm seeing that Martha's first line of, oh, well, that didn't take long. Now, with what you just said, I'm taking it from a different point of view of, it doesn't bother me, but boy, you're up to your old tricks.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's how I saw it.
So. Yeah. It's just like, ugh.
Well,
being out of a relationship, she now sees
remember
it.
Somebody saying earlier that the doctor was a player.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I don't like that part
right.
of his personality that he like, kind of plays around. And I think the person who fixes him from that is the companion right now. Like,
yes.
She fixes him.
She does.
Right.
Two unit soldiers find a room in the factory basement with a pool of green liquid. A humanoid pops up from the pool and pushes one of the soldiers away before submerging again. It had an umbilical cord running down its back and attached to its neck. Suddenly, General Stahl of the 10th Centauran Battle Fleet arrives, incapacitating the soldiers and orders two factory workers to prepare the soldiers for processing.
Creepy.
I think this is the beginning of the lighting dynamic that happens in this episode. There's very much purples and greens in that particular basement with all the liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really colorful. It separates like the normal world, I guess, if you will, like with the unit soldiers and the atmosphere. And I don't know, I like it.
I didn't catch on to that.
Oh, I thought the lighting was, you know, going more towards the children's show because it reminded me of Batman, the 60s Batman.
You know, I can
when you're
see
in a villain's lair, the coloring's different or this angle is the Dutch angle or something. Mm-hmm. I thought it worked.
Oh, yeah, I did too.
Definitely takes you somewhere different, but it was, to me,
reminiscent of that.
Reminiscent of that and blatant, bold.
I think it works here.
But so, I think it worked.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, you know, it was like, oh, we're doing this now.
But I like that you're clued into something. This is where something weird is going on, where when you're on the outside, it's lit normally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I was going to say the practical of that humanoid coming out is great and creepy.
That's very creepy.
Like, especially with the mouth, like not being fully...
It still has skin attached on the top to the bottom.
It's still developing type of thing.
It's not quite done yet. But I don't know what that liquid was. I want to know what they did with that because it wasn't clear.
No.
It's definitely...
Amniotic fluid.
But when it comes up, it just washes off and you don't see that color green. And it's just sort of, what is it? What consistency? Would you want to lie in it?
It looks like gack.
Yeah, Nickelodeon
like
slime.
Like Nickelodeon slime.
I like how they quickly give General Stahl, and by Stahl, all of a Centauran point of view, how they look at the world. He's quickly sizing up the soldiers in militaristic ways. You know, when they say things to him, he's saying, that's right, okay, you know, you will face your enemy. And he takes his helmet off. And I think they're quickly establishing what a Centauran is. Mm-hmm. I like that, you know, for people who just don't know who a Centauran is. This is the first time they've ever seen them. And, you know, they're short, but they're also built for battle. They're compact.
And we'll learn more about that, the battle attributes later, which is great.
And I thought one interesting line, because we brought this up many times, is the Stahl says that words are the weapon of womenfolk, and he thinks that they're useless.
Yeah.
You know, and that we've always said doctor's weapon is words.
Oh, mm-hmm. I never put the two together.
Going back a little, when they meet Captain Colonel Mace, you know, and he salutes. Doctor, oh, don't salute. And totally ignores Donna. Donna doesn't take that. I love that. I'll take a salute. You can give me a salute.
Donna doesn't like being ignored, but she also doesn't like to be secondary.
Yeah, I think that comes from the episode with the little fat...
The adipose.
Because she was on her own for so long doing these investigative type things while searching for the doctor. So they are very much less doctor and companion and more contemporaries.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she just loves putting him in his place.
The doctor needs someone to deflate his ego.
Totally. Especially this one, especially the 10th doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Don is the perfect companion for this doctor.
One thing about this section that I think will later go to my judgment of whether or not this two-parter is a good for a new Who viewer. We get to the Atmos factory and, you know, they start rounding up the workers and nobody stops to talk to the workers. And I know why in the context of this episode, because that becomes a plot point later. But, you know, most of the time when we have the Doctor and Donna like arrive somewhere where there is this large human element that isn't the military, one of the first things they would do is stop to talk to one of the workers just to get the common person's view of like what is happening here. And I know we don't do that here because they're all hypnotized and we're going to learn that later. But I think that's one of like, you know, it's part of the storytelling of this particular episode, but it's something that is kind of outside what I would expect the Doctor and especially Donna to treat a new situation like this.
But I like that because it is run by the military. What they do would be, we're coming in, corral everybody together. We'll deal with that later. We're trying to figure out what's going on with Atmos itself.
Yeah, like the Doctor doesn't even know what his role is at this point.
Right.
Like, why is he even mm-hmm. here?
I know, Martha says, so we had to call in an expert. Okay, who is that? Oh, me. Got it. Mm-hmm. So he is kind of lost in this, which is different than a lot of the other episodes where he would just be coming in and actually meeting first the workers. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great observation, but it's one of those, well, what if, you know, Superman's pod landed in Russia kind of feeling. You're seeing it from the other point of view now.
The Doctor is a bit standoffish toward Colonel Mace and Martha because of the use of guns. Martha isn't carrying a gun and calls the Doctor out, telling him he can come and go, but some people have to stay behind. Being part of a unit gives her the chance to make it better from the inside. Donna enters the conversation and says she found something going through the records and personnel. No worker has taken a sick day, ever. Colonel Mace has Martha and Donna start examining the workers, while he tells the Doctor about Luke Radigan and his school for the gifted. Luke has picked special students from all over the world. Meanwhile, Martha tells Donna about her family being imprisoned and tortured because she was traveling with the Doctor. It wasn't his fault, but she warns Donna that even though the Doctor is amazing, people near you can get hurt.
I like Martha's explanation of what she's doing in UNIT, and it parallels what Jack is doing with Torchwood.
Yes.
And I can see how that's more appealing to Martha because she wants to stay put and change the reality that is happening to her at that moment because of what happened to her family. And the Doctor is not really in reality. He's in his everywhere, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, because that's where he is all the time.
And then Martha's warning to Donna is a great line. The Doctor, he's like fire. Stand too close, you get burnt.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Donna comes in and going, all of you people with all of your high sophistication and everything, you didn't check the records. It's like, I know how this works. I've been a temp. I know my way around an office. There are no sick days. This is what's important. Sure, you're looking at the thing, but you're not talking to the people, which goes back to what Auburn was saying earlier. It's like, no, this is what we usually do. We talk to the people to find out what's really going on.
I kind of wonder if that was intentional. There's that moment when they're running into the factory for the first time and what are you looking for? What are you looking for? And Martha, I believe, illegal aliens. And that's kind of funny from a Doctor Who standpoint. But then they're talking, when they talk to the actual worker, he's from Poland.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of immigration into Britain from Eastern Europe, which a lot of people don't like. And a lot of people would consider these people like illegal aliens. And I'm wondering if the writer is trying to make a comment on UNIT wouldn't even consider these people worthy of questioning because they are just nobodies. The illegal alien, the transient, the undocumented, they're like the
whipping boy.
The disposable people, you know? And I hate to say it that way, but that's a Star Trek reference.
They forgot they're human.
They forgot they're human, yes. And it takes Donna to bring that up, and then it takes Martha to go, this is the key.
If it was here filmed in America, it would have been the Mexican workers.
Yes.
Oh, they don't even speak English.
Exactly.
Don't talk to them.
Exactly.
I really do think they are making the statement. It's just more obvious here because Polish people are white, you know?
Yeah.
And yes, Mexican people, we can be white, but we are of all colors. So
Right. What
separates us mostly is the language. So, but they are, it would, if someone walked into a factory in Los Angeles and said, made the joke, oh, illegal aliens, even if it was a alien show, it would have been very obvious. You're like, oh, they're talking about the Mexicans.
Right. Exactly. Right. And if somebody went into, if the federal government, like say there's like, you know, some dastardly plan going on in this factory, they would round up the Mexican workers and just shunt them to the side. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't consider them as valuable evidence gathering thing. And I think that's the message that they're doing with this. And they do it really well and really subtly, you know, and then, and that these people are also being abused.
Yeah.
The real aliens, the real bad people are making them work 24 hours a day. No sick time, no leave. They're hypnotized. They're destroying them. They're just going to use them up.
Again, back to the commentary of
what
you do with the Polish factory workers.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I'm off my high horse now.
Not nearly as serious as this conversation we've been having, but I thought it was strange when the Colonel, right?
Yeah. Colonel
Mace is telling the doctor about the Radigan Academy as being like a hothouse for geniuses. The doctor was like, "Ooh, I wouldn't mind going there." And then the Colonel gives him a look and he's like, "What? I get lonely." I was so creeped out by that because at first I'm thinking like pedophile, creepy old man. But I'm like, no, that's not what the doctor meant.
He meant that he wanted people on his intellectual level.
Yes.
Right. So then it's insulting.
Yes. Yeah. He's insulting the colonel.
He is.
He's totally insulting the colonel.
Not just insulting the colonel, but insulting you, me.
Everybody.
Like I'm insulted by
Donna,
that.
Donna,
everybody. Like he, average people bore him so much that he needs to like escape to like a place where there's other geniuses like him just to have a decent conversation. I don't know.
Taken objectively and out of context, I totally agree with you. At this point, he's still a little iffy on Martha, loves her to death, but oh my, I'm scared. But he's not making a play on Martha. He's not making a play on the viewer.
He's
anything.
Not making a general statement about humans or other creatures in general. He's like trying to insult.
Not in this.
This
instance, but I think in this instance, he's basically saying you're an idiot.
To the
I
colonel.
Don't like you.
To the colonel directly.
To the colonel. Yeah. And this is what this doctor hates. You know, I mean, we've gotten the post Christopher Eccleston PTSD soldier, you know, the time war is over kind of a thing. And now the doctor's like, that's just got to stop. We can't let that
like that type of thinking has to destroys stop. And
yes, okay. Yes. And he fell into it. And so he's probably also angry at himself. We're kind of putting that on him now that we know a little bit more, but we do know that he's very upset over how he acted in the time war. And so I think he's projecting his hatred of military action onto this man who is so blatantly military.
Okay.
In his best way possible, sarcasm and
using words and words,
pompous, yeah. You know, yeah. Being pompous and sarcastic.
Because it was brought up in Bad Wolf, where Eccleston is on Satellite 5, and he says, "You know, why were you doing this and sending all these people to their deaths in the games?" And the guy says, "I was just following orders." And he goes, "You're dead to me, then."
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
So I think that's how he's viewing this colonel: is that a guy just taking orders and not questioning the morality of what orders he's been issued.
To change the subject real quick, the scene where Martha is talking to Donna about her family reminds me about Sarah Jane talking to Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And I love School Reunion, but I kind of think I like this scene better. It's not so bonk bonk on the head. It's not so cut and dry. And it seems a lot more natural when Martha's saying it to Donna, just, and it's like, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you to be careful. Just be aware of it.
Well, the way she approaches it is more like, does your family know where you are? Because if Martha had told her family what was going on, so much stuff may not have happened. Mm-hmm. Because her family didn't know, her mom fell into
the Saxon's web.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because family and outside the TARDIS doesn't have, there are no consequences. You know, there isn't anybody being affected by Sarah Jane's travels. You know, there is with Rose. They're starting to move into that. But I guess Sarah Jane's talking to Rose about Rose. you need to be careful about you. Right. And Martha is saying, you need to be careful about everybody around you.
I see it a little bit differently in that for Martha, it's still relatively new. Mm. And I think Martha is still in that we're going for it. If I can't be with the doctor, I'm doing similar doctor-like things to this, but know what the consequences are. And I think Sarah Jane's had a longer time where she just dropped off, thought she'd see the doctor again, and he just disappeared. And so she's been waiting and wondering, gave up on that, did her own thing, and now he's back. So I think a lot of different feelings are involved. So I think it's a slightly different thing. Like you said, it's more personal, but she also saying that it's worth it, all this heartache, but
yes,
you know, kind of thing. But
and she,
it's a slightly different scene because of that, because of the time frame involved.
And she clearly says it's not the doctor's fault. He never plans this.
Martha or?
Martha.
Right.
And I like that they threw that in where it's like, no, she doesn't harbor any resentment or anything. She still is very happy that she had the experiences with the doctor, but it is just kind of like, but be careful.
Right.
And it just, I don't know, it just kind of rang a little truer to me than the more bonk bonk on the head with Sarah Jane.
It's like, okay, I like them both. I don't need to compare.
Yeah, and I don't think that's bad.
The remnant of each other, yes.
And if you ask me, I like them both too. Okay.
And I think that's my perspective is that Rose is such a, for lack of a better word, more immature in her development.
At that point,
yes. And then so Martha and Donna are maturer. And so they can have a conversation as opposed to a tit for tat.
True. A lot more banter. Philosophical and
yeah.
idea of what's going
so
on
that's
rather
how
than
I
take it personally.
That.
Yeah.
She was young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, and Martha and Donna are women, adult women that have experienced life and have gotten to places, like gotten to their, where they want to be with their careers and like future and moving forward. Like
Rose, Martha. Don is still searching.
Searching.
Yeah. Which I think is important.
Yeah, but Rose was just really young.
Rose was really young.
It's like if you pick someone up right after high school.
Yeah, Don is very different from Rose. They were in very different places. Yes, you're totally right on that.
Yeah, Don isn't the place where she doesn't care what people think anymore.
Exactly.
It takes a while to get there.
The doctor grabs Donna and plans to go to the Radigan Academy, but she says she has to go home, talk to her family, and warn them about Atmos. Colonel Mace insists that Jenkins drive them for their protection. Martha is examining a patient who has an abnormally high heart rate and robotically does what she asks. Thinking it is some type of hypnosis, she goes to find Colonel Mace. She is approached by the two processed unit soldiers and is told to follow them to the colonel. They take her to the basement instead and lock her in. Thank you.
And lock her.
I know, that's like, the ending of that kind of dropped off there. Lock her in the basement.
I like the reveal of this where the camera is pushing in on these two soldiers that you only see the backs and you don't see their faces.
Yeah, you only hear their
voices.
And
then we know who they are once the camera dollies back and then you can see them. I thought that was very intelligent filmmaking.
The scene with the I'm going to leave, doctor. but there was so much I wanted to show you. Well, I guess it's okay. But wow, I'm going to miss you. And oh, you're just going home. Yes, I'm just going home. And I love how she's just like, I'm just going to let you string out all this rope and just let you dig your own grave and mix your metaphors.
Yeah, just Donna plays him like a fiddle.
It's so great. And then it's like, you are such an idiot.
And you're going to give me a lift there.
Yeah.
It's his first experience with a companion that has her own agenda.
Yeah.
Yes.
Instead of following his agenda.
And in the end, he loves it.
Yeah.
This scene, the Donna's goodbye, fake goodbye or whatever, fake out, totally reminded me of, speaking of Martha, Martha's and the doctor's first goodbye in her bedroom and in the Lazarus Project. So I went back and I watched it because I wanted to see how similar it was. So it's not that similar, but the thing that is similar between these two scenes is the person who is surprised at the goodbye, like their reaction. Let me set it up. So here, the doctor's like, hey, let's go. And Donna's like, well, I'm going to go home. And so he thinks like home for good. So mm-hmm. he's surprised. And then in Martha's season, Martha is surprised that the adventures are over. And so I like that the doctor is now put in a companion's position of the adventure being prematurely over or over before they're ready.
I didn't think of Martha's bedroom scene, but now that you brought it up, I love that. Thank you. Because I like that they switched it. That's a similar
type
of thing.
It's a role reversal.
Yes.
It's fun.
I like it.
The doctor and Jenkins drop Donna off and proceed to the academy. Donna reminisces about her travels, but then sees her grandfather, gets emotional, and runs to him. She tells him about her adventures, and he says not to tell her mother Sylvia because she wouldn't understand.
I love that scene.
It is great.
I tear up even now watching it again.
And even with the flashbacks, I think they work.
The flashbacks really work well.
Yeah.
And it's also, she's only been in 3 episodes, 4 if you count the Christmas special. But that was a little bit different, Donna. But as a companion, it's been only 3 storyline, 3 episodes. And it's just, they put so much weight into it. Which is so great. I love that. And it just makes me think, this is why Donna's season seems longer, because there is weight to it.
Yeah, I saw that they put in those flashbacks because we've only seen her on 3 adventures with the doctor.
They're pounding home.
Yeah.
The emotional impact.
And it's also funny how when we watched Partners in Crime, and she's, I'm waving to Fat. That was a funny line, but then when you see it in the flashback, it has a different connotation to it. And it's, I don't know how they did that, but it's great that they did it.
And also Wilf, when he sees her, breaks up. It's tearing up now. They both acted and did it so well.
Yeah.
Now on the technical side,
I was going to say, what were you talking about earlier? Well, I got a little scared.
That I think both, first, I really like the idyllic British suburb. I don't know what that town or area would be called.
Oh, but playing soccer. It's a suburb.
Like a kid,
like the neighborhood,
the street, and all the people
walking
recognizes Donna. Yeah. Yeah, like that was a very pretty, I imagine, it was a good homecoming for Donna.
Being able to walk down the center of the street and not have any cars
honk at you.
I think, Kelsey, you probably would explain it better. Like, just the seeing Donna walking and then going into her head with the memories of past adventures. And then seeing Wilford was a very, very long shot. Like, he was very wide.
Long being distant?
Distant, yeah. So he looked very small in the frame because Donna was far away from him. And
the staging and the drawn out, how long that scene lasted, or just the drawn out cutting back and forth. Like, I expected Donna to run towards him and then hit by a bus or something. Just the way that the staging was and how many times they cut back and forth between the two characters.
And I think it was that same awkwardness that felt to me like her walk down the street and remembering was a different location. Wilfred house in the front yard where they meet is a different location. So maybe that was the emotional connection between the two scenes didn't quite connect as well for me, but.
Or those two
or
scenes.
Or it was just, something was off enough about it that, that it subconsciously.
I do think it is the same street. It might have been filmed at different times of the day.
Okay.
And that might be.
Could be.
The lighting might have just subconsciously hit you, especially you're an editor.
Well,
so you can really
pick up on that.
But the extreme longness of that shot to see Wilfred, and especially because it was probably 2008. I mean, our TVs have gotten so much bigger, so I can't imagine how small he would have been to the audience
that,
then.
Though.
Yeah.
And I also like how the staging of he doesn't run to her.
Mm-hmm.
He's overcome and he's just standing
because
there
because he's on a different set, so he can't run to her.
But I like it because he's welcome. She's and he's so far away because she was so far away from home, and she goes running and she's running home. So he doesn't move. He just waits at home and hugs her when she gets home. And then I also feel that had he moved out into the street and started to approach Donna, it would have become that cliched lovers running through a field to each other, which of course they didn't want to do at all. So it was like just to have him stay there and be overcome with emotion and I'm waiting for you to come to me. Oh, I love it.
Even though I felt like it was too drawn out, the cutting back and forth, I do think it works because it gives you time. There's a tense moment there of what is Donna going to do? Because they are so far away, she has time at that point to turn around and go run away from Wilf. But that was just something that I was thinking as this scene was playing out.
I just think it was she was so far from home, figuratively.
So they showed you in practice.
In practicality, yeah, her running in.
Yeah, and I think that's what I like about it. It's drawn out, but I think it's drawn out for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. See, because I don't think it's too long. I think the cutting back, I think it's good. I'm with Frank. I think they hit that one dead on.
Like, I like the scene. I'm not, like, I felt the emotional connection. So in the summary, and the way that Kelsey, you were mentioning some of the flashbacks, you said Donna was reminiscing about her adventures or feeling nostalgic for them. See, I took those flashbacks as she was remembering the danger that was happening on those adventures, and cutting back to her, like, emotions playing across her face, I took it as the memories of what, not the positives of her adventures, but of the dangers of it and what she was, like, reasons to leave, reasons to stay home is how I was taking it. But I mean, it's up for interpretation.
I can see that with this, but I have the same reaction.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And it was what Martha had said. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially with Pompeii, people get burnt. But it was her thinking through Martha's words of all the dangers and things that can happen and how much it affects her and how much she's changed in just, from their point of view, such a few days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's. I think it's a great scene.
To bring it biblically, it reminded me of the prodigal son, when the prodigal son returns home and has the father waiting. And it's one of those moments.
Donna would have to have bitter siblings going, why is she getting all that attention?
Did the mother, the mother kind of played that role to Wilfred.
Mm-hmm. So to go back when the emotional scene with Donna and Wilf, I like how Donna is describing all the things that she's going through. Like, it's bigger on the inside, the blue box that you saw me in. And he doesn't even care. He's just like, are you safe?
Mm.
And I like that his priority is that his granddaughter is safe.
I was like, don't tell your mother.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, we're not going to tell.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll be fine.
The doctor and Jenkins arrive at the academy, and Jenkins remarks that it's like a Hitler youth program. Luke shows them the science department, and the doctor notes all the advanced projects. In Luke's office, the doctor says he couldn't have invented Atmos. It's too advanced, just like the big circular tunnel thing in the room. The doctor walks up to it and activates it. It's a teleport pod that takes the doctor to the Centauran spaceship orbiting the Earth. He quickly returns and warns Luke and Jenkins to run. A single Centauran, General Stahl, transports through before the doctor can deactivate the pod. Having watched classic episodes, I like that the doctor is in a military jeep being driven with a unit soldier. It just reminds me of those Third Doctor episodes.
Because it's not his car. Where's his car?
No, I know, but he doesn't have use of the TARDIS, so they could just take the TARDIS there, drive him around, but they have to drive, and I like that.
And it's showing that he's not against all military. He likes Ross Jenkins.
Yes.
You know, they're hitting it off, because Ross just comes off a little bit more as a normal person who's in the military rather than that strict military person that the doctor sees Colonel Mace as.
Which is funny, because Colonel Mace is wearing the traditional unit uniforms, and Ross is wearing, like, what I associate with, like, black ops. It's all black and tactical gear, and not like a dress uniform, which is what Colonel Mace is wearing. So I like that it's switched, where as a classic viewer, you would go, Mace looks like the Brigadier's uniform. I'd warm up to him because of the visual aesthetic, where Ross is more of the black ops, military, spec ops type of killer. And I like that it's switched.
Mm-hmm. I really like the line when the doctor first meets Radigan. He says, I haven't got a commanding officer, do you? Because the doctor kind of already knows. And that also goes along with the rest of the, like, the anti-gun, anti-military kind of feelings that the doctor has, where he, you know, sees that chain of command or sees something like it as an opportunity for even good people to, you know, just follow orders. And it was a really, it was a kind of a quick line, but I really like it. It had a lot of punctuation to it that I enjoyed.
And continuing on what you're saying, I thought that whole scene between the two of them was a lot of fun with the whole Atmos system. You can't say system because it's system. And correcting his grammar. And that just sends Luke off going, no one corrects me. I thought just the dynamic between the two was great.
No one said no to you in a very long time.
Which goes back to some of the stuff that the doctor's been doing when he's coming here and going to unit and being that arrogant. It's like, you see it even taking so many more steps ahead with Luke. It's like, you know, there's a difference between how the doctor can learn from it and Luke can't.
Mm.
There's a funny line that the doctor says as he's leaving the Santaran ship. Because they're like, how did you get in here? And he says, intruder window. And then, like, it teleports back. I didn't catch that line until we were watching it the second time with subtitles. Like, the first time I watched it, it just sounded like he said, in through the window, which isn't really that funny.
And that's a recycled joke from the Ninth Doctor Dalek episode. Henry Van Staten said it.
Mm-hmm. That's a Dalek. That's
the Dalek.
Sixth episode Dalek?
Right.
I agree. Particularly this episode has a couple of those lines that go by really fast.
Like knowing that Luke Radigan is 18. I did not know that the first couple of times watching this episode. Watched it with subtitles and I saw that I think it was the Colonel or someone, mentions that he's 18. Up to this point, I didn't really understand his character. Like, because the actor does not look 18. He's like 26 at best. Like, that's how young he is. That's how young he looks, 26. So, like, the character was just off for me this episode and the next one. But now knowing that he's 18, he's a teenager. Mm-hmm. And he's a teenager who, since the age of 12, no one has said no to. It makes so much more sense. His immaturity, his...
It makes a Justin Bieber.
Yeah. Yeah. Get exactly. It makes more sense. So... Mm-hmm.
I believe it.
Yeah.
He was 23 when this was made.
When the doctor goes through the whole science department and all the different experiments are going on, it just sounds like it's banter to me when I watch it. But then everything they're saying pertains to the next episode. It's like, oh, well, there's this type of device, there's this, you put them together, you can actually like try and live on another planet. And now it's like, oh, this is all information that they're giving us, you know, exposition in a different type of way.
The doctor names him as a Santaran, a clone species that only cares about war. They are the best soldiers in the galaxy, but wonders why they are hiding and using 18-year-old Radigan, as that action is beneath their species. He continues to monologue and says the Santarans have one weakness, a feeding vent at the back of their neck, which means that they must always face their opponents. The doctor then hits a tennis ball? Racquetball? Ball? Bouncy
cricket,
ball?
Cricket thing? Ball.
No, right? it's too bouncy for a cricket ball.
It's not a bowling ball.
Yeah.
It's not a Quidditch ball.
I think it's a racquetball, which bounces and hits Stahl's vent. Stahl is momentarily disoriented, giving the doctor and Jenkins time to escape.
On this one, Stahl asks, who is that? What's his name? Because he never gave his name, which I thought was really interesting, you know, coming up later on, that the doctor says he's a doctor, but Luke Radigan always just hears that as the title. Well, the doctor's here, meaning any generic doctor, and doesn't realize the significance of what he knows yet.
Stahl recovers, fixes the transport pod, and teleports him and Luke to the ship. Luke tells the Santarans that 400 million Atmos devices have been installed and that his test of the device worked, killing 52 people. Oh, and the doctor is in an Atmos car. Stahl knows of the doctor, an enemy of the Santarans, and wants revenge for leaving them out of the Time War. Atmos takes control of the car, carrying the doctor and Jenkins. It's programmed to contradict any order given to it by the doctor. The doctor orders it to drive them into the river, which shorts out its processor, allowing him and Jenkins to jump out. Stahl and Luke see the Atmos signal terminate and believe the doctor is dead.
Very Kirk-like.
I did laugh at this one. I thought they did it really well of, oh no, it's going to explode. Jump, jump.
Yeah.
That, you know, just great. Small little sparks. It's like, oh, is that all?
They saved a lot on the
budget.
Practical effects budget.
Right.
And then also the doctor using words to save them as his weapon to counteract the Atmos system.
I really enjoyed the shot of Luke Radigan being on the Centaur ship or space station and looking out the window to the Earth. Like, I felt that was very epic. And it really made his line of, it was always so small, or it was always too small.
Too small, like, for me?
Yeah. That, I mean, it helped that land. Because I first saw that, I was like, whoa, a really, like, big, epic shot of space and seeing, like, the vastness of the cosmos. And then, you know, you expect, I think what we expected Luke to say at that point was, you know, something along those lines of being amazed at how big it all was, but he didn't. He
went the opposite.
He went the opposite way, yeah.
To confirm that he's a bad guy. And I like how they bring it in. It because, you know, when you think of the Time War, it's between the Time Lords and the Daleks, and it's like this big war. But then the Centaurans are a war race. They're bred for war, so it makes sense that they felt slighted, that they were left out.
Yeah.
And I like that they're bringing in that there's a reason why these people were left out of that epic battle.
And this is where Stahl says, I thought you didn't know his name. It's like, well, he's just called the Doctor. It's like, does that mean something? So,
does that mean something to
you? Oh, yeah, I had this really important information that didn't know I had.
And for criticizing the other two sequences of people like meeting each other, I will say the car going to crash into the water here, like it was definitely put together really well. Like it felt like it was going to crash. But I think if you looked at each of those shots individually of the truck going into the water, you would see that it's not really like that close to going, well. But yeah, it sure felt like you were about to be in that water.
They'd already blown the budget on the car in the beginning.
Yeah.
And we all like the Sonic, you know, Sonic screwdriver and think that's something special. Mm-hmm. And I like that Stahl said, no, it's just a simple Sonic trick that messed up the transport. And he's able to fix it without a problem. Yeah. I mean, really quick. Boom. Okay, now we can use it again. Mm-hmm. I like that we're thinking this is something really big. He has a Sonic that can solve everything.
And Stahl's like, the machine is repaired now. Like, that's it. Did it all.
And back to what they did with the explosion or the mini explosion to save money. They also saved money with the quarter lane signal. So that not allowing for props to be shot. And I like that it's fits within the story, but also saves on the budget.
Mm.
And I do think that the makeup here is really good on the Centaurans. Much better than the classic.
They've never looked better.
But it's like, this is really done well.
And they knew they had to for all those close-ups. And
right.
I think it was at the end of this episode when I noticed Stahl has like a little goatee or something.
Yes.
He has like an old beard. Like that was really cool.
Because you don't see edges.
Wispy little eyebrow.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see the edges on it. Even now I didn't say any. So I don't know if that was to cover up an edge or not, but it just, I was impressed with the makeup on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Stahl sends Commander Skor to infiltrate unit where he finds Martha bound to an alien device next to the pool of the green liquid. They need a more sophisticated agent than just hypnotized soldiers. From the liquid arises a clone of Martha. The Doctor and Jenkins go to Donna's house. He and Wilf recognize each other from Christmas when the Titanic nearly hit Buckingham Palace. Sylvia comes out and recognizes him as that strange man from Donna's wedding. He calls Martha, well, cloned Martha, and warns her about the Centaurans. The Doctor asks Martha to tell Colonel Mace, but when the Colonel sees her, the clone says there is nothing to report. The Doctor tries to disconnect the Atmos device from Donna's family car, but activates the release of poison gas instead. An alarm notifies Stahl of this, and he orders all cars to be activated. Wilf gets into the car to move it somewhere safer, but is trapped inside as the poison fills the car.
Does anyone notice that Martha gets undressed while she's unconscious?
Well, they undress her. Yeah, and then they put her in a nice hospital gown.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they're processed, though, so it doesn't mean anything to them at the time.
I mean, the Doctor, the 10th Doctor, when he's regenerated, he's in a bathrobe. It's just TV magic.
It's just that needed to be done, that's all. It's like, I think you're thinking a little too much into it.
It was a plot point that had to happen, and they just didn't focus on it. And I'm just going to say it now as a little bit of foreshadowing, not to break the timeline, but Wilf, stop getting into locked things to try and help out.
Yeah, he's like the well-intentioned companion.
Yeah, he is. That's nice. You did it once. Learn your lesson. Don't do it again.
The street that Donna could walk down the middle of, you didn't need to move your car out of the way. It was okay. Leave it there.
I did like that Stahl figured out that only the Doctor could activate the Atmos. You know, he goes, oh, the Doctor's alive because he's the only one who could do this. So I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a small little line, mm-hmm. but that he deduces that. And they have the music playing when clone Martha is out. Mm-hmm. And it's Martha's theme, but it's evil Martha's theme. So it's slowed down and it's got a, you know, the bass to it.
Yeah, it doesn't have the
wonder.
Woman sing. Isn't the woman sing?
The choirish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is just ominous music.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a good touch. I'm glad they did that with the music. And another part that I thought was just hysterical. all the cars are going off, and at the facility where Unit is, their cars are just going off, and all the soldiers start shooting at the exhaust pipes. Really? You think that's going to help?
But all that practical fog, I thought was great, and then it leaves the episode with that kind of, to me, it's an epic shot of the doctor standing in the middle of the road, kind of diminished with his back against us, and with all the, not the fog, but the exhaust. So I thought that was a great way to end the episode.
Yeah.
And they can never get that right when they're trying to add fog into a scene that doesn't have it.
Yeah.
It always looks weird and fake.
Fake,
and
yeah.
This, I'm glad they had it as practical because it really sold it well.
You needed it.
Yes. And I like the doctor meeting up with Sylvia and Wilf. I mean, Sylvia, he would know, which is fine. Yeah. But it's like, oh, wait, you. But, you know, Wilf just being like, you're the guy from Christmas. Oh, my gosh.
You're the one from the wedding.
I just like that they tie it all in and it's like bring everybody together all at once and to go through that.
Well, and Donna just being like, how do you know who he is? I was like, oh, I saw him at Christmas. And then Sylvia walks up. It's him. And Wilf being the one going, how do you know who he is? Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me? Well, you never told me.
And they did you notice they threw in that line? It was like, it was at the wedding when you had Spanish flu.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So which he would have been at Donna's wedding.
He would have been at Donna's wedding. But because of what happened with the actor playing Donna's father, you know, they had to explain it somehow where it's like, okay, Donna's father was at the wedding. Wilf was too sick to be at the wedding.
Is it explained in Partners in Crime why her father's no longer in the picture? Did they mention it in the episode?
No, I don't
or
think so.
Or ever in this season?
No, they mentioned that he passes, but it is mentioned eventually.
Okay. It would have to be at some point, I think, in Partners in Crime.
It might have been. I don't remember.
Because Sylvia on this one says, you know, this new mortgage. So it seems like they moved into this house not too long ago, but...
Oh, are they in a different house than they were in Runaway Bride?
Yes, because they were in the, like, I don't know what to call it, row house, or when he dropped her off outside when it was snowing, it was a different place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Interesting.
You're right. Oh, okay. Yeah, this new mortgage. Oh, yeah.
The Centauran stratagem. Who is this episode good for? Or specifically, who is this episode good for?
You know, the funny thing is when I don't watch this episode for a while, I don't kind of hold it in fond memory. And then when I see it, I really enjoy it. So I don't know why that is. Going back to the when she's engaged and they're talking about Tom, Martha has the line of, yeah, I know. I have a doctor who goes off to exotic places. But I love how she says, I got a Doctor Who. I really enjoy it. This episode, I think it's fun. So I'm going to say it's for a new viewer. Because I just think it's a fun...
Frank's jaw drops so quickly.
That's what that sound was.
What? So it's everybody. Why not? Why are you all laughing at me?
I think it's more Frank's reaction.
I'm laughing at my own husband.
Because my vantage point, I was perfectly lined up to see the reaction.
Oliver was watching my reaction, and Kelsey was watching his reaction. So it was a chain reaction.
I think it is a good episode, especially after watching it for this. Some of the things that take it out of the new category for me are we don't get to see Martha at her best. And I, you know, we get to see her as super soldier and we get to see her as replaced. And some other things like I think it's a good episode, but I think it's good. And I think you like it, Brian, because you are a fan. And so I think rewatching it, it is a really good episode, but I think because you have the fandom in you, it gets better.
I think you're right.
And I think rewatching it, like we watched it twice, right. I think it is a good episode, but it does take like
rewatching it
to really appreciate it fully.
I stand correct.
So I'm going to say fan, but please don't change.
I'm not changing
vote.
Anything. Okay. But
I'm going to say something similar, but completely opposite. Brian. Going,
she's clever.
Thinking back on it, I think that I like it. And then when I watch it, I realize, oh my gosh, this episode was so boring.
Episode
it's
is padded.
So padded. Yes. There's very little things happening. And it's just like, oh,
the two soldiers
so
examining the room and
boring.
Opening up the, yes. up the thing was like, so you could have done this in 5 seconds.
So it has to be a fan.
I agree with what everybody just said. So I don't think there's anything I can add. But I will put this in the fan category because I think a fan should go back and watch this episode again But now going back with the, you know, the canon in mind and having watched other episodes and know where characters are going, I think there's a lot that is in this episode that a fan will get out, will get out. Oh my God. I don't know if that makes sense.
A fan will get a lot out of this.
Okay, thank you. A fan will get a lot out of this episode going back and rewatching it for a second time. So it's best. I think this episode is best for a fan.
You skipped right over casual, huh? Right to the fan. Okay. Mm-hmm. The reason my jaw dropped was because I thought I'd be the only one putting it in a new category, a new viewer.
We agree? Yes.
That's the face I had.
There we go. Now I see what's funny. Oh.
I had similar type of idea than Brian of looking back on it, because it's not one of my favorite episodes or one of the best episodes. I thought I'll put it either. I'm trying to decide between casual or fan. And then rewatching it, I keep thinking, this is pretty much everything about Doctor Who in these two episodes. It shows that he changes companions, what happens to the companions, you know, gives you some information about the TARDIS, you know, the whole thing with Donna and Wolf. You may not have the same emotion as I do when they reunite, but it's the effect that it has on the family of traveling with the Doctor. And Aliens has a little bit of the cheesiness, you know, made for kids with the whole pool and the lighting changes. To me, this is almost, looking at least today at this time, because I think it could change, is almost the epitome of a Doctor Who. And I don't think it's the best episode, but I think I would introduce somebody to it and just so I can gauge what they like about it, what they don't, what they want to watch about it. But this has so much of a feeling of the classic episodes, you know, a classic villain with some of the modern take on things that I was surprised myself, but I say this could be for a new Who viewer.
I agree with you if it was one episode.
I think that's valid. There are places that can be fixed, but overall, looking at all the episodes of Doctor Who, this runs right down the middle. This has all the things, you know, touchstones of what Doctor Who is.
I feel like both episodes are a little padded.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that too. And, you know, what you were saying, it's my love of Donna.
And it's hard because Donna, you know, I want to put every Donna episode into a new category. Yeah. And this was a good episode. I don't mean to diminish the quality of the episode at all.
You know, if you compare it to Daleks in Manhattan, this one's so much better. That's probably why I avoid it. I'm thinking of it as it's the two-parter in the middle of the season that's not so great. And yet, this one's fun.
And the connection with that is that Helen Rayner wrote the two Dalek episodes in season 3, and she wrote these two episodes in season 4. And originally, she was not going to write them because of all the negative criticism she received from the Dalek episodes, mostly Frank. But
and on that note, I want to say sorry. Because we're realizing now that what the writer has first gets so changed as well. From different interpretations, who's directing, who's, you know, cuts that they make. They can't do it because of some other budgetary cuts, or they need to change it because somebody didn't understand it when they should have. So it's not always the writer's fault.
But Helen Rayner did continue to write these after Russell T. Davis convinced her not to take the comments too seriously. So I'm glad she was able to write something better than the Dalek episodes.
Yes.
For me, I thought I was the only one that going to put this in a new category.
No.
Because...
Wow. I'm glad I went first.
Because what both Frank and Brian said, I agree with. But then to say something that they haven't said is that the emotional core of this episode and the impact of Donna coming home really hits me for some reason. And we've only seen her for like 3 episodes. And then to piggyback off of what... Auburn was saying, and Kelsey, that the classic connections, like now we've watched classic Who, like UNIT comes up and I have more connection to that, and then reintroducing the Centaurans to the new Whovians. I like this interpretation, much like I like the introduction of the new Cybermen in season 2. And then we also have 2 companions. I like it when the Doctor's traveling with more than just one companion. And then Donna says... Santarin, the way that originally they said the Centaurans were going to say it, but then the actor playing the Centauran in The Time Warrior said, no, I'm a Centauran, we say it's Centauran. And so I like that they use that as a joke in this episode. And then...
But see, you wouldn't get that if you had never seen any of Doctor Who. Well,
I know. I'm saying this is why I'm putting it in a new category.
But it...
But we put it in the new category for people to, like, continue to watch Doctor Who. He discovered that years later. And he likes it.
And also because I think every character in here is very thought out, because Donna is smart and able to deduce that Martha is engaged where the doctor doesn't. Radigan, even though he's kind of unlikable, is still smart. The Stahl is talking to Radigan and says, the doctor. And he's able to figure out that he's talking about the doctor and not just a doctor.
Yeah, there's a lot of clever stuff in this between the padding.
Mm-hmm. It is clever.
And I don't mind the padding. I also think this is a good episode for a new viewer because it bridges the classic viewers with the new version of the show. So those homages they can get, and they can be introduced to this new version of the show.
Yeah, I think if you are a fan of the classic Who and wanted to introduce a fan of the classic Who to the new Who, this would be a really good episode for that.
But it is interesting that the three of us who have watched classic Who before starting this, you know, are fans, like this episode as a new introduction. I think because it harkens back a bit to the classic either way of telling a story or because of those characters of UNIT and Centaurans. So, yes.
It does, I think, feel very
because
old
it is, too. Yeah, because it is, you know, biased on our account, and that's what opinions are. Mm-hmm.
And since Josh isn't here, I wanted to throw this out there that every time they call...
Where did this music start?
No. Since Josh isn't here...
Where did we hear this theme again?
No.
Oh, I guess we're not allowed to do the bad jokes.
These are just interrupting. They're not jokes. It's true. These are just rude. Since Josh isn't here, I wanted to throw this out for him because... Raiders of the Lost Ark is one of his favorite movies. And every time they refer to Martha as Dr. Jones, I keep thinking about Josh when they do that.
Oh, wow.
So I have that Indiana Jones connection I hear that. Well, that's Temple of Doom, not Raiders.
Oh, yeah, good point. That's not a good one.
The Who Knew podcast, as you've heard, is divided on who this episode is best for. Who would you introduce the Centauran stratagem to? Let us know. Email us at whonewpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time when the future becomes the present.
Congratulations. You've just listened to an episode of Who Knew.
Our wonderful theme music is by Michael Grady.
Find him on Facebook at The Universe Explodes.
All our episodes are engineered by Auburn.
Find him at auburnmeekly.com.
You can find this show in several places.
Follow us on Twitter. At Who Knew Podcast.
Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast.
Comment on our Facebook page.
As always, please leave comments, reviews, and click like to help support Who Knew Podcast.
Also listen to us on your Amazon Echo by enabling a podcast skill.
All our episodes are on WhoKnewPodcast.com.
This podcast is inspired by Doctor Who,
the longest-running sci-fi show in history.
And especially the revival spearheaded by Russell T. Davis.
Thanks to Russell,
Sydney Newman,
Verity Lambert,
Ron Grainer,
and all those involved in the adventures of our favorite Time Lord.
Your work continues to inspire and entertain.
We just left the evil lair.
Joker.
I thought Riddler.
Riddler? I don't know Batman.
I would go with Joker because of the purple and
green.
Yeah,
the Riddler had that too.
And his lair had all the lights moving around everywhere.
I might go Riddler.
They're good. Was that a villain colors?
Oh,
they're
the dog.
They always are.
Definitely not Egghead.
Well, I always confuse the Joker and the Riddler anyway. It's like, who is the Joker? Is this the Riddler?
Oh, no.
The Joker.
Move away.
Does Elon Musk have an academy? Like the Musk Academy, where there's a bunch of teenagers in red jumpsuits.
I would not be surprised.
Creating science experiments for Mars.
They're already on the moon.
Musk Academy's on the moon. Nice.
That's what all those SpaceX experiments are for. They're actually transporting students. It's going to be a surprise.
Wow.
I'm just thinking more of these puns.
No.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
We have Stahl the Undefeated and Score the Bloodbringer. What would your name be if you were a Centauran? Well, that's an end of the episode question.
Eugene, the pun intended.
Yes! Oh my God. We should keep that. It's just recording. That's funny.